Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Don't say you never get anything for free. You can get a free 30-day trial of Love Film, the one-stop shop to rent films and games online simply by going to thefootballramble.com/lovefilm. Films and games by post, or you can stream films on your PC, TV, PS3, and now on your iPad. To check the terms and conditions, find out more, and claim your free trial, go to thefootballramble.com/lovefilm now.
Pull your trousers up, ladies and gentlemen. It's the Football Ramble. Lovely to have you here. And my name's Marcus, and I've got Luke with me.
All right.
Jim also.
Hello.
Not Pete. Not Pete. But don't worry, we've got a show for you. We're going to start by asking the question. Roberto Mancini said Peter Crouch's goal belonged in the NBA.
More of a statement.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, so it was.
do the statement first, then do the question.
So that was the statement. Mm-hmm. Here's the question. If you could see Peter Crouch play another sport, what would you like to see him do, Jim?
I would like to see him play polo, but as the horse. Right. That would be enjoyable, just seeing a bit, I mean, very undignified for him.
Who on his back?
Just a generic jockey.
Michael Owen.
Michael Owen, why not? Yeah.
Loves his horses.
Yeah, exactly. He'd be well into it. Any sport that isn't football, he's into as well, like really passionately.
That's true.
It seems. They'd make quite a good double act, I think, on the old polo field. Yeah. I mean, obviously normal actual horses otherwise. But yeah, I'd like to see that. Maybe ice skating as well. Be quite interesting.
That would be very good ice skating, actually, yeah.
Ice polo, with Crouch as the horse.
With ice skates on the hands and feet?
Yeah.
To be fair, no one's done ice polo, I don't think.
No. Probably quite dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I really struggled with this one.
Did you?
Yeah, all I ended up writing down was horse racing on a massive horse.
Really?
Yeah.
That's all you had?
I think he'd be good as a jockey on a massive horse.
He could sort of run alongside it with it between his legs.
He'd be dreadful as a jockey.
I had other ones were diving.
Yeah, that'd be good. Gangly diving.
Yeah.
Because he'd only be able to do one somersault before he could have.
Exactly. I think he's so tall that like his feet would touch the end of the diving ball, his hands would touch the wall.
And he'd just sort of hang off it.
Yeah. Basketball, because he handballs all the time.
Well, that's what. He's done that one.
What's your one?
Pole vault. That would be good. Gymnastics would be good as well. Yeah. Any sort of, you know,
what
flips.
What he's established here is any other sport he does, he'd look ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a gangly man. Yeah.
Rugby.
That's all we've learned,
We played rugby.
He'd get snapped in half.
He'd get tied around the posts.
Yeah.
Like, as banter.
Yeah, true.
They'd probably all get off with him and say it was gay if he wasn't shouting banter, as Luke always says.
There's a lot of banter in rugby, to be fair.
I don't even use the word banter, that's what you're talking about.
I'm going to take the points.
What?
For pole vault.
An opening question to forget there, ladies and gentlemen.
Outrageous.
Oh, dear, let's move on to the Premier League. A very important week for the world of football, obviously with regards to the Hillsborough investigation. And it was great to see the footballing community coming together.
Absolutely.
In that time. And I thought Match of the Day 2 did a lovely little end where they put all the names of the victims up.
I did that on Match of the Day as well. I didn't see Match of the Day 2, but I presume I did it on both.
Yeah. Okay. I thought it was a nice little touch. And Liverpool themselves, they went away to Sunderland and drew 1-1. Should have won the game, perhaps, or certainly good enough to win the game, Luke.
I thought they dominated every area. I thought they were unlucky. They had more possession, more shots. There was an amazing moment with Jonjo Shelvey when the ball came to him, and it was like he didn't know what to do. Like, did you see that?
I watched the game.
There was a chance, and the keeper dived into the near post and was sort of out of the picture, and it rebounded right out to him. He was a couple of yards outside the area, and it was like he completely panicked, and it like hit him on the shin and bounced about 5 yards in front of him. I literally got off my chair and was like, what was that? But other than that, I thought they were quite good.
What do you think of Shelvey?
Yeah, I don't know. I had high hopes for him when he first signed because he came from Charlton, didn't he? He was really highly rated.
Yeah.
I don't know he sat in the kind of youth team for a bit, didn't he?
I don't know if he's had enough football to be. I'm not sure if he's quite good enough at this stage.
I don't know, maybe a loan move would suit him, do you think?
Yeah, maybe. I think that Liverpool, you know, if you look at their season so far, it's a fairly even game against City. They drew 2-2.
They look really good in that.
They should have won that game.
Yeah.
Should have.
Okay, they got beaten by Arsenal, fair enough. The West Brom game was unfortunate. They lost 3-0 and had 60% possession.
Mm. Yeah. I would probably say they were unlucky to lose.
Yeah.
It tells its own story, though, doesn't it? You can't blame too much on bad luck. You've got to sort of make your own luck in these situations.
Yeah.
And obviously, as we've said many times, Rodgers has got to have time to put his style on the team. And maybe that's what they're sort of having to calibrate, I suppose, as a unit.
I think it's a disappointing start in a points tally sense. I mean, they're 17th or whatever. Mm. But I think they'll probably have quite a good season, actually.
Yeah,
that means
nothing now.
What's that?
The points total at the moment.
What's a good season for them, though, do you think?
I don't think they'll be knocking on the Champions League door.
No.
I think they've got to be looking Europa Leaguers.
Yeah, okay. I think Raheem Sterling's been a bit of a revelation.
He has.
Played a big part in the goal for Suarez. And did you see Alan Shearer's analysis of Joe Allen in the match of the day? That was weird. He basically seemed to sort of slate him for not lumping it.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. He wanted to hit more longer balls.
Yeah, and I sort of thought he missed the point completely because...
Because he's not that type of player?
Well, and he's got Gerrard next to him to do that.
Yeah.
To give the ball away a massive pass.
But to be fair to Gerrard, he is fantastic at hitting a diagonal. You know, a long pass rather than a hoof.
But I think they complement each other very well. Alan's got great pass completion. You know, he's got better... I mean, for example, in the Sunderland game, he had better completion than Gerrard and made more passes, you know, so... I think it's a bit unfair.
I think Liverpool have got a good side there, and I think if they can, it's the front three, isn't it? If Suarez can, you know, put a few chances away,
so many chances, don't they?
Yeah,
they
and I think
they hit the post all the time.
They do. Well. I think if Barini just he's I think he's had an all right start and he's looked lively. If he can just get himself going. And then you've got Sterling, who's shown great promise. I think they'll be all right. You know, it's just for me, it's that front three.
Well, they need to click. They don't know each other, do they?
Yeah, of course.
Suarez did an amazing dive where he's looking over at the referee before he'd even hit the deck.
It's got to that point with Suarez now, unfortunately, that even if it is a legitimate penalty, you never know if he's going to get it or not because people, rightly or wrongly, have an idea about the sort of player he is, sadly.
Mm. I mean, it stands to reason that Suarez would win a lot of legitimate penalties because the really interesting thing about him is how he runs at players.
He's tricky and fast at defenders
because he knows he'll be able to get round them.
Yeah.
The slightest.
Maybe I made a good point, though, that because there was contact. Well, it is a contact, or at least a semi-contact sport. Contact's not good enough. Is that contact enough for it to be a foul?
No. If you brush past someone and then dive, you've still dived.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like that idea. And we've talked about this before a little bit. I mean, making the most of contact and stuff like that. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that's legitimate. But I don't think it necessarily automatically equates to a foul.
Yeah.
You know, it's a contact sport. You know, and it's also that sort of myth where, just because it's not a penalty means it's automatically a dive. That's not true either.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think Suarez probably was a dive, actually. And I think that... I mean, the Welbeck one for United was as well.
Robert Snodgrass did a shocking one for Norwich against West Ham. So it's been a very bad divey weekend, actually.
But I think, to be honest, to sum up with Liverpool, I mean, it's been a week where the football's very much played second fiddle, really. Yeah. So it's a shame they couldn't get a win. It would have been timely, but you know, they're going to be okay, I think.
Yeah. Another one-all draw in the Premier League was Stoke City versus Manchester City.
Yeah.
Manchester City just can't win there, can they?
Well, it's not just City. A lot of the bigger sides struggling against Stoke out of the Britannia because they're just a nightmare to play against, aren't they?
1999 is the last time City won at Stoke.
Peter Crouch loves a goal against Manchester City.
Mm. He basically cheated, though. That's the thing. I don't understand why people come out and say, at least he's honest about it. Well, if he's that honest, he'd say when he did it. Yeah. Well, yeah, or at least say when he did it, so that can't be a goal.
Peter Crouch is a bit of a cheater.
You reckon? What else has he done?
Peter cheater.
Pulled the Trinidad and Tobago guy's hair.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
In the World Cup.
That's two incidents in a 10-year career. that doesn't label him.
Well, you put me on the spot, and I thought, about that. Jim, have you got one?
That incident with the prostitute.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there you go, you see.
Crouch is having his nachos.
Approved.
Yeah.
But he does come across as quite likeable in interviews, though.
Michael Owen still got it.
Michael Owen did come on, didn't he?
Everyone's been saying it, even though no one can possibly... Literally, no one can know if he's still got it or not.
That's true.
Because they've not seen him play.
Did you see he was tweeting when he was getting burgled, Michael Owen?
What, at the same time?
Well, there was. He was watching. He was watching his CCTV in his.
Impression that he would have been doing that anyway because he's such such a dull man. Like, I just have a look at the garden without actually going out to the window.
And he was watching the CCTV and a burglar was trying to break into his house and he was posting a picture of it on Twitter saying, "Great TV tonight, been watching some fella on my camera for an hour weighing up what to nick."
Did loads of tweet on Twitter go, "That's not the telly, that's like your living room." Is this sort of bloke
the police got him?
He watches. Oh, that's
all right.
After he hid in his van.
He called Duncan Ferguson. Is this sort of bloke who would watch his garden on CCTV because walking to the window and looking into the garden is a bit of an emotional roller coaster for him, isn't it? It's too much.
All that standing up is a bit knackering as well.
It's like having beans with chips and fish fingers. No, it's too much. It's too much colour. I want to keep it straight.
Javier Garcia.
Yes.
He scored a goal, a header. He's brilliant in the air.
I was pleased by that because I said that a couple of weeks ago.
You did,
He should have had two. It's a great save.
It was. Yeah. Save of the season.
So far, definitely.
So far.
I don't know, that Ali Al-Habsi save for Wigan. A little while ago, that was amazing.
He was dreadful at the weekend.
I know. Well, he's undone that. We're taking that away from you.
We're taking it off you now. You can't be considered for save of the season now.
City dropping points already. Manchester United winning against Wigan.
Yeah, with Rooney and Van Persie not starting the game as
That's
well.
That's right.
Which
yeah.
shows you the strength and depth they've got.
As we mentioned about the diving, obviously, Welbeck. Hernandez missed the penalty. Butner and Powell getting amongst the goals.
That Butner goal was so much of it. Was again was down to Ali Al-Habsi though. It was a brilliant, brilliant run.
It was, wasn't it?
But yeah, that's interesting to
he
see
can't believe he's
Nick,
up, can he?
Nick Powell's goal was great as well.
Yeah, class finish. And Scholes.
Yeah,
that man Scholes
turning back the clock. No, he's still a footballer now. He's just doing things now.
Yeah. He can do it when he's a bit older than the average.
I thought Welbeck was a disgrace. He had a couple of dives. He's really busy and he played quite well, but he needs to stand his feet. It's poor.
Yeah.
He seems to improve every time I see him play, but these things start creeping into his game. It's a bit annoying. There's an absolute quality comedy bit of defending by Boyce. When they thought the Hernandez goal was offside.
Yeah.
And what it was Boyce in the right back position was playing him on by about 3 yards. And he saw all his defensive mates put his hand up. So he put his hand up, looked around, shuffled forward like 3 steps, and they started going mental at the ref.
The linesman's not going to go, crap, he is as well. Yeah.
Never going to happen.
He saw it when the play was on.
Wigan have done what they classically do, which is finish the season really, really strongly, look really good, like a really decent footballing side, and then just start off as if they've made no progress again. They just already look like, you know, they're going to struggle.
A lot was made of their sort of appalling record at Old Trafford, but then I don't think many teams have got a great record at Old Trafford.
No, I was about to say. Yeah.
You know, it doesn't really happen. They don't lose an awful lot of games at home. I thought Al-Habsi was dreadful. I really did. I thought
it's a shame he's a good keeper.
He didn't deserve that penalty against him.
No.
He saved it well. Apart from that, I mean, he shouldn't have been coming off his line for it anyway. Welbeck was struggling to get to the ball and was right in the corner of the penalty area. I don't really think there's any need for him to come out for that, even though Welbeck did cheat him out of a penalty. I just thought it was a poor decision. And then he's obviously fumbled it for Scholes' goal, didn't he?
Yeah.
But the Scholes opened the score and then Nick Powell finishing the score. It was a nice little bookend. Because I think there's 18 years difference between them or something, which is amazing.
Marvellous. Here's Sir Alex Ferguson's 25 years in charge. Will be honoured with a bronze statue outside Old Trafford. That's not surprising, is it?
Seems like there's a new significant milestone for Ferguson every week.
It went through that stage about a year ago where every single week something happened. So he's now got a stand named after him and he's got a statue.
Yeah.
Oh, we love a statue on the Ramble.
Don't we? It'd be interesting to see what one it is. Give him the hairdryer.
Imagine that. Yeah, it's just got a hairdryer in the mouth. And you go up to it and you get the hairdryer experience.
Yeah, there's a thing.
Or that a one. Massive hairdryer with like a tiny Lego size electrode at the bottom.
speaking of the hairdryer, there was
not looking to disrespect the great man.
Extracts from Wayne Rooney's book have recently been published.
It's about a hungry caterpillar.
Yeah.
Oh, his book. Well, he's his favourite book.
No, it's about a hungry bloke.
Hey, we were all brought up on the Hungry Caterpillar.
Yeah. I'm not knocking that. That's very much not to the target of what I just said.
True. He was mentioning Ferguson's infamous hairdryer treatment and saying there was nothing worse at times as you could imagine. He says sometimes he shouts back.
Rooney?
Yeah.
I bet it's just gibberish, though.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Okay. But he's just repeating what he's like a parrot.
But no. Rooney smash.
Rooney is very much one of those blokes you can imagine he likes to have the last word, a bit like myself. He always chipping off back, I reckon.
Well, he says...
real dick.
But it's interesting that he says this while he's still being managed by Ferguson.
Yeah, it's a dangerous game, isn't it? I've always found it astonishing that players, Man United players in particular, still do this after what happened with Yap Stats.
Well, he shouldn't be writing a bloody book anyway. He should be doing that at the end of his career. Well,
didn't he sign a contract to do like five when he was about 18 or something crazy like that?
Yeah. Well, and he said that, that the Hedrow treatment couldn't push players on and spur them on, or it could just completely crush them and make the lads' heads drop and all the rest of it. But he is coming out and saying to the public, this is the one thing that Sir Alex Ferguson is well known by. I'm not sure if it works or not.
Yeah,
but I'm sure I read a while back that Ferguson's really chilled out on his older age. He doesn't do the old hairdryer much anymore.
Well,
I mean, who knows? But you're right.
It is surprising.
I'm surprised United and Ferguson and the decision makers at United let that go ahead, let that come out and be published, because it's as you say, it undermines it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Zero dear. One man who certainly doesn't go in for that kind of thing is Roberto Di Matteo.
No.
Very calm man.
Does whatever he's told.
And by John. And they went to QPR, Chelsea did, and drew 0-0, handshakes, etc.
God, it's becoming really boring now, the handshake thing. It's happening all the time. Just get rid of them.
I wanted to do a handshake before the ramble today, but you boys wouldn't do it.
Well, it was unnecessary, but we start on time.
That's true.
Graham Pohl was saying this in his article in that wonderful newspaper, the Daily Mail, and he was saying that the reason why it was brought in for the Champions League was it respect, and then they brought it in the Premier League because there's a thing where the referee sounds the buzzer when he comes out to check players' kits and boots and all the rest of it. But don't teams, they delay.
He was essentially saying that the reason for doing it is to make sure the game kicks off on time.
Yeah.
Because the players don't respond to the buzzer, which tells them to go out and get ready.
Because there's a bit of gameship, isn't there?
Yeah, because they want the psychological advantage, whereas the handshake makes them go out there together and get them out there.
Yeah, that was the reason why it was brought
in. I didn't know that. It's strange to me, that.
I think there's still too much homophobia in football, so to address it, they should get rid of the handshake and all the players should kiss.
Yeah.
I'd start each game just on the lips.
Okay, yeah.
Each player kisses each player. And then they just get on with it.
That'd be nice. It'd be a nice gesture. It'd
be interesting to see if Terry and Anton would have kissed.
But you're absolutely right with the handshake before the game. I think that I agree with what most people have been saying, which is that...
It's a bit contrived, I think.
Yeah, it is contrived.
If you have to force people to be polite, it's not really polite, is it?
You should play the game, and if you've earned each other's respect, shake their hand at the end. You know, we've all played football. You know what it's like. You seek people out to shake their hands after the game. What's wrong with that?
But I did think to myself about Anton Ferdinand doing that, and I thought it was a shame because, of course, he's the innocent party. But I thought, had you have shaken Terry's hand, you know, you would have been...
You'd have been the bigger man.
Etc, etc. And I just thought it was ever so slightly childish from Ferdinand, and I thought, I don't want to think that because he's not done anything wrong.
Well, I don't know, mate. If at the same time, sometimes you've got to stand up for something you believe to be right, and if John Terry had racially abused me, I wouldn't want to shake his hand. You know,
I don't want to shake his hand anyway.
No, I don't.
True. I understand.
I do take your
saying.
Point, but I think the only thing I'd add to that is it's very much Anton Ferdinand's decision. But I'd like to think, you know, it's difficult to put yourself in that position, of course. You'd like to be able to move on if you could. But Ji-Sung Park snubbed him as well in the coin toss and the handshake.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether Ji-Sung Park was a bit like, look, I want to sort of stand by you. But then at the same time, you'd wonder whether all the other players would do that. I mean, it could have gotten to a farcical situation where none of the players would shake John Terry's hand.
Yeah.
I'd have quite liked that, I think.
And he snubbed Ashley Cole as well, right?
He did. Cole spat in the opposite direction when he did
class
it.
Did he really?
Yeah.
It's a class act, isn't it?
I don't know whether...
He's kept
his
head down recently, isn't he, Cole?
I'm not saying that that could have been coincidental.
You are.
he almost swerved off the road when he didn't shake his hand.
Right.
I mean, obviously it's worth pointing out as well that Terry was found innocent of these charges, but Anton Ferdinand clearly believes in his head that wasn't
You still could be found guilty of
to take that, you know, you remember when we profiled Clarence Seedorf, I think we spoke about this in the profile of him, that he was once racially abused during a match by a player, I forget who. And then after the game in the players' lounge, this young lad came up to Seedorf and was wanting a photo and his autograph and all. And Seedorf looked up, and it was the son of the player who had been abusing him. Mm. And the guy, the player, obviously looked very awkward. And Seedorf, you know, would have been well within his right to go, you know, sod off, mate, or whatever, you know. But he didn't. Seedorf sort of shook his hand, and he said he belittled the guy doing that, and the guy was just felt like really sheepish and was very much put in his place, you know. And I quite like that approach, you know.
Yeah.
But
if every footballer could be as big a man as Clarence Seedorf, it'd be a very different game.
It would be a magnificent.
It'd be 199 every game.
But, you know, it's never happened to me, etc. So there we are. But
speaking about the football,
yes.
Cesar made a sharp save, didn't he, earlier?
Did.
It's good to see.
It's good to see Julio Cesar looking a little bit like Vince Vaughn. As we said before.
Yeah, he does, actually.
Mm.
They're very... strange team QPR. You just expect new players to pop up every week. They just.
But you'd never have thought who says that. I know he's.
I know, that's a huge one, isn't it?
It is really, isn't it?
Yeah, but he did pipe up and say, "I'm here to get QPR to the top four and then to the title." And it's a bit. Yeah. Like, I think you might have had your wall pulled over your eyes.
Well, yeah. Granero's doing as well. I mean, that's a huge.
Yeah, Granero as well.
He's well. At, he's loving not being at Real Madrid anymore. The way they're going at the moment. He's bringing them up. How are you getting on?
Yeah. Yeah. More on that later.
We are going top four and then title.
Ryan Nelson.
He's Japanese.
He is Japanese, like Pete. Ryan Nelson said about that incident with John Terry. It's funny, he's, after the game, when he looked like a naughty little schoolboy looking down.
He was sort of,
well, if you ask John. He said that he said to John Terry, apparently, when he fell over, he said that was a bit embarrassing, and he said Terry just laughed and ran off. Did you think it was a
I don't think Terry gets embarrassed.
No, I don't think so.
No.
Not very easily, anyway. Did you think it was a penalty?
I don't think his reptilian brain has that kind of, you know, the capacity for that.
I didn't think it was a penalty, no.
No?
No. I thought it's one of those things that if you...
he shook his head, ladies and gentlemen.
if you start giving penalties out for that, then bloody hell. It's one
Team Nelson.
It's funny that, because I've seen John Terry do that the other way, and the penalty's not been given. But at the same time, occasionally, very rarely, sometimes referees will just give them, won't they?
Yeah.
I mean, Mike Dean's a bit of a one for that. He seems to give them for that sort of thing, but you don't see him given very often. And I think Terry went to the ground very easily as well, actually, in that incident. But then I do hate John Terry, so I might be biased.
It's impossible to be objective.
Yeah. Oh, Jim's Arsenal, as they're now known. 6-1, Jim.
No, it's lovely.
Lovely.
We're talking to Luke about this earlier. And
it's
something I touched on in a piece I wrote this week. A lot of the time, people seem to have almost expressed surprise at the last couple of kind of performances from Arsenal. Because what happens every summer is Arsenal lose a big player, and it becomes longer and longer since they've won something. And people go, oh, they're finished, they're over, they won't even be topped like seven, they're going to be rubbish. And people get Arsenal mixed up with a side that have lost loads of players and not won anything for a while, for a bad side. Yes. They forget that they're still a very, very good side.
Right.
And they obviously showed that against Southampton. I mean, it was some proper stop it in yourself moments for Southampton.
Is that two wins in a row for Arsenal?
It is, isn't
never
it?
Seen
only one goal conceded as well the whole season so far.
And that goal was basically an error.
Ridiculous.
It wasn't an organisational problem.
Wenger was furious with Chesney for that. You could see that. But I mean, Arsenal could have had more as well. Giroud was apparently screaming at Theo Walcott to put him through late on. He needs a goal as well.
He does.
Hugely. If he can get off the mark, then that's good. But what it will do for Arsenal is give them confidence in their goal scoring ability, which when you've lost a player like Van Persie, that brings you so many goals, you need to do that. Podolski and Cazorla have just been revelations, the pair of them. They've both been brilliant.
They have been.
Podolski is an absolute bulldog. He's got real strength, and he'll get in the mix in midfield as well, and that's what they've needed. Cazorla's a stocky guy as well, and Arteta is kind of playing almost Pirlo style role, where he's shielding that back four, but sort of really distributing from deep. It's brilliant. It's really enjoyable to watch them at the moment.
Podolski's got an amazing voice.
Yeah.
His voice is really fun. It's like a really deep cartoon style German accent.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's quality. And he goes, he kept saying the interview.
It's Rainier Wolfcastle.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, it really is like that. And he kept saying, the boss, Arsene Wenger.
Yeah.
The boss, Arsene Wenger. Yeah, we know who he is.
He's just making sure he gets it right.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. It was a great free kick.
Practicing his English, it was brilliant.
I like the way Arsenal play at the moment. I thought the Southampton were poor. They made some dreadful errors at the back.
They look out of their depth.
Such a horrible running.
They have had a horrendous running, but it's the manner of the defeat. You know, they've gone two up and lost from that position twice, and also to lose 6-1. Was it twice? Was that right?
No, they were 2-1 up against City.
2-1 up against City. Well, still, you know, they've lost from winning positions against big teams, and obviously getting absolutely battered. It's a worry for Southampton.
But Nigel Adkins sensibly said, or in my view, sensibly said, you know, when we saw the opening four games, we knew it'd be tough, and anything we got out of that would have been a bonus. Realistically, our season starts against Villa next week. So
true.
I mean,
well, they did play Wigan at home, though.
It's a dangerous game to play, though, isn't it? Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, but what can they do? You know, they've got to get on with it. He's got to say that. They've got to keep their heads up.
They were unlucky in the Wigan goal.
Couple of results can change everything this early on.
The Kone goal was... Yeah, it was questionable.
Well, yeah.
Unlucky in that game.
But good news for Arsenal, though. Maybe with a little bit of the spotlight off them, they could win the league.
I genuinely think they'll be decent this season. We said before the season started properly, we said, yes, they've lost Van Persie, but the players they've signed are all quality. Like, Cazorla's a brilliant football player.
Yeah.
Podolski's got 100 international caps. They're decent players.
Yeah.
I think they've replaced Van Persie with those players.
They were always the plan. And if Giroud can get scoring, that'll make a big, big difference. I mean, I think they have an outside chance, especially if they can keep defending as they have.
Well, Bold's been
an absolutely huge...
Steve Bold stepped in then. It's no coincidence they started defending really well.
Kshelny was probably easily Arsenal's best defender last season. He's not getting in the team at the moment because Vermaelen and Mertesacker are playing so well together. So there's depth there.
Mm. That's worth pointing out. That's a good point.
And Sanger's not even back yet. You know, Jenkins has been really good in the games he's played. He's really stepping up.
You don't say that very often, do you?
No.
Elsewhere in London, Dimitar Berbatov is happy. And he's scoring goals and Fulham are winning.
Brilliant.
He said that, didn't he, after the game. He scored two. First one was a lovely one. And Fulham won 3-0. And he said, you know, if I'm happy and whatnot, then I'm going to play football better or something.
He said
like
it in a very
that.
Sexy way. He said, when I enjoy myself, things happen.
A friend of mine sent me a...
Martin Yell's behind the camera going, oh yeah.
I've been using that with a few ladies on the way home from the studio.
Because that's what he does. He talks to girls in the street. It's disgusting. Yeah, a friend
that's
of mine...
That's me, not Berbatov.
A friend of mine sent me a text. Our mutual friend Scott, in fact, Marcus, sent me a text about a chant that the Fulham fans were singing for Berbatov, which was, don't go chasing fullbacks. Please stick to the smoking and the goals that you're used to.
Lovely, isn't it?
Brilliant. I like that. That's excellent.
I think somebody said it on Match of the Day, a big fish in a small pond. You know, at the age of 31.
It's just good to see him playing.
Yeah.
It is, yeah. That's what any player that's in a situation like that should want.
One thing I feel I should remind you guys of is that the last full season he played, he was top scorer in the Premier League.
Yeah.
You know, it was one of those bizarre situations at United. It wasn't like he was dropped for being shit. It was because he dropped just because he didn't fit in this particular system and they bought other strikers. And he couldn't get a look at it. It was a bizarre situation.
It's like when Van Nistelrooy had to move on. It's the system evolved around him. Or evolved him out, almost.
And those other players that Fulham have signed seem to have settled in quite nicely.
They
actually
have.
And that was a good win against West Brom, who started the season very well. And I know Adam Vinge went absolutely mad.
That was outrageous.
But he seemed really affronted that you're not allowed to kick someone in the balls.
He apologised afterwards, though.
Well, not really. He said he doesn't want it, let's hope it doesn't happen again. He never actually
That's
apologised.
That's down to you, pal.
Yeah. But it was strange, though, because the fullback, Rita, just sort of nicked it off him. He didn't smash him or anything, and he just turned around.
Clark looked absolutely furious, and you don't want to see a furious Scotsman waiting for you, do you?
No. It was like... But the thing is, for Odin Wingy, knowing what we know about him, having seen him play a few times, it did seem to be like a few seconds of just red mist. It wasn't... He's not like normally
like that. Yeah, of course,
yeah. That's probably his first red card.
But that's what makes it so unusual. That's the last thing you'd expect from him.
Absolutely.
Kata Niklic looks like...
he looks a good player, doesn't he?
He does, yeah.
I loved Berbatov's little expression after his penalty. Did you see it?
What was that
he
one?
He sort of just nodded to the guy, I forget who it was, come up to celebrate with him, and just sort of went, well, yeah, what'd you expect? Obviously, I was in the school.
And act so surprised.
Yeah, it was a really nice... Basically, he's the next Bond. He's definitely the next Bond.
Andy Garcia, stunt double.
Yeah.
I think it's been said many a time. Yeah. Let's move on to the Championship, where free scoring Blackburn Rovers hit five away at Bristol City.
That was an absolutely clownish game.
They conceded
some of the goals in that were like, it was like a grown up playing a child at FIFA.
I've never seen so many defenders in a penalty area do so little at one time.
5-3 to Blackburn. Now, you see, I just assumed Blackburn weren't doing very well because he's still in charge.
But they've got so many Premier League quality players.
But I suddenly was like, are they top?
Yeah, they are. I did want... I mean, Nuno Gomes is 36. We've got three goals in five games for Blackburn so far, and he's obviously doing the business at that level.
Danny Murphy
so
and Dixon are two who have played regularly together, and they're both decent players still.
Well, if you Jordan think- Rhodes. I spent £8 million on Jordan Rhodes, and he's scored twice.
Yeah,
it's already paying off.
If you think of the players I've got who could argue playing the Premier League still, Murphy, a two-who. Jordan Rhodes probably could.
Scott Dan.
Nuno Gomes. Pedersen. He's still decent enough. I mean,
Robert Robinson.
I think Stuart Ripley and Mike Newell are still there.
Yeah, exactly. Will Tim Cox. Sherwood shoring up in front of the back four.
David Batty.
The defending for Rochinha's goal especially was just so bad. It was so bad. It's laughably bad. Yeah, but Rovers have spent loads of money, haven't they? They're obviously it's like West Ham last season.
Yeah.
They need
to
get promoted.
That's
they've
made some very weird signings as well. They signed a lot of young Portuguese players. It looks like they've got them in bulk. It's really odd.
They're keen to admit they hadn't really seen play.
Yeah.
So I wonder if they'll get anywhere near the team. I don't know.
Brighton, sort of free scoring sides, they beat Sheffield Wednesday 3-0. They failed to score in their first two games of the season, did Brighton, but have scored 11 in their last three. Craig McCall-Smith has got five of them, and Wayne Bridge has got two.
Yeah, I always forget
free
he's
free scoring Wayne Bridge. Yeah. I forget he's
a
footballer.
Two.
Yeah. For Wayne Bridge,
yeah,
come on.
True, yeah, fair enough. McCall-Smith seems to have clicked into gear, actually.
Yeah, well, he had a decent season last season, didn't he?
Yeah. He started off this season very slowly, though, didn't he?
Yeah, so Brighton are right up there.
Did you see Craig Bellamy's goal for Cardiff? My God.
Oh, yeah.
He came off the bench for Cardiff, changed the game, scored a free kick.
Mm.
Oh, it's miles out from the corner of the penalty area, but further out.
Belly.
Smashed it into the top corner. Mm. It's a brilliant goal.
He should eat up that league, really.
Oh,
he?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Yeah, they beat Leeds 2-1. Tasty game it was as well.
Oh, that is always going to be a tasty one, Cardiff. Yeah.
And Thomas Ince scored again for Blackpool, didn't he?
He did, yeah. He can't stop scoring. A lot of goals in the
championship. Get him on that plane.
Get everybody on the plane.
He's got to have a bit. I mean, Blackpool fans won't thank me for saying this, but he's got to have a big move in them sooner or later. I think he might go. There's a chance he'll go in January, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we shall see. Peterborough struggling, aren't they? They got beaten 5-2 by Burnley.
Eddie Howe looks $1 million.
He does. Well, yeah, Burnley have had a couple of sloppy results, but there's a better one for them. But Peterborough, right down at the bottom,
lost
already.
All their games, haven't they?
Oh dear.
But I enjoyed. Enjoyed Dickachoy's goal for Palace against Charlton.
It's just the championship.
Did you see the goalkeeper, Charlton's goalkeeper, Hamer? He they were 1-0 down like the last minute,
yeah.
And he went up for a corner, had a little bite of the cherry. it was cleared, and
oh, that's
cleared
right.
Over his head, and I'll have another go at this. Yeah. Overhead kicked it. The most awkward looking overhead kick I've ever seen. He went miles into the stand. It's a good effort, though. I applaud the effort.
Oh, a goalkeeper doing overhead. There was a Danish keeper in like the Danish third division or something. There was a video doing the rounds who scored an overhead kick.
He scored it.
Yeah,
amazing.
You know,
Schmeichel-esque.
Absolutely. And we're going to mention Hull City, who are doing pretty well as well, beating Millwall 4-1. So all hotting up.
Basically, go to your local championship game, there'll be loads of goals.
And some good ones as well.
Yeah.
It really is. But it's not the best league in the land, because the SPL, ladies and gentlemen, is where it's all at. St Johnstone beat Celtic 2-1. Celtic are fifth with a game in hand on 8 points, but it's Motherwell who lead the way.
The Steelmen.
12
the
points.
The Well. Gone the Well.
Motherwell are here.
A Celtic targeted top five this season.
Celtic, well, they're fifth.
Yeah.
So
they're looking to consolidate that.
Yeah, they're on track.
I cannot begin to tell you how exciting this is.
Yeah, oh, it's amazing. I mean, because the great thing is, there must be this collective feeling in the SPL that it's us against them.
Shit.
Let's all gang up on Celtic. You know,
exactly. Any word from the Gorgies?
Two wins off the top.
What about Craigie Brown's boys?
They drew, didn't they?
They've just got another coach.
They can't score. I think Aberdeen. They need to.
Who's the coach? Jock Scott. I think they might have, with Brown and Scott, the oldest
and
coach
Archie.
Team. Yeah, and Archie as well. The Archie oldest not. Coach team of all time.
Mm.
They've got well over 100 years old, apparently. But I was
stories though. Imagine having a cup of tea with those boys.
Hey, is he talking shite again? Well, you know that no team outside the old firm.
I think it was a nothing result they got. Them,
oh, was it?
Yeah, I think so.
It'll do that. I don't think any teams won the SPL since outside the old firm since 85. And that was
Aberdeen,
the Magnificent Dons. Yeah.
Ferguson's Aberdeen.
So it'd be interesting to see what
well,
happens.
Well, this is the year. I'm telling you, this is the year. Hibs
well,
are
I mean,
up to...
every year is a potential year now until Rangers get back. You know?
But it was always a... Yeah, you're right. I mean, it was always a three-horse race. Now Rangers are out of it. I'd say it was a 10-horse race.
Yeah.
Maybe. Always a three-horse race.
They're all
it?
In there. All
I don't
there.
Think I didn't notice you slipped that one in.
Well, the Hibs, they beat Kilmarnock 2-1. They're second on 11 points after six matches. They're flying as well. My goodness, it's takeoff time.
It's the most exciting league in Europe.
It's the most exciting league. It's the most exciting league in Scotland.
Yeah.
To be fair, that's still an achievement, considering what it's been in the last 200 years or whatever. SPL, absolutely magnificent scenes. We go to the Scotland of the South, La Liga, where...
I'll have a little snifter, if you don't mind.
All right, okay.
I was hoping that you were going to mention De Canio's little interview. He's done another one.
Oh, for Swindon.
He did about a 5-minute interview after their draw.
Who are you, Frost?
Yeah, it
was like, this will be every week, though.
I know, but it was funny because it was like they drew 2-2 against Carlisle.
Yeah.
And he said it was a better performance than last week. But I implore you to go to the BBC website and listen to this interview. It's a radio interview. And he starts off talking about, like, in all sorts of fascism euphemisms, like strong mentalities and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But after about 3 minutes into the interview, it is genuinely impossible to work out what he's saying. Because he's going like quite ranty, and he's getting really sort of excited about it, and his accent is so heavily Italian, it's impossible what he's saying. And the guy who's interviewing him just sort of asks really generic questions. You can't work out the sort of gist of it. It's worth checking out.
Excellent stuff. Well, La Liga, where Real Madrid are struggling. They lost to Sevilla 1-0. And Mourinho said after the game, "At the moment, I have no team." So there are very few heads who are committed and concentrated and who have football as the priority in their lives.
Well, they're 8 points off Barcelona after four games. That is an absolute... That is a nightmare.
They put Scotland in context.
Unimaginable.
No, they've I'm pretty sure they've never overhauled an 8-point deficit over Barcelona, and they've already done that. They've got it after four games.
I mean, I suppose because it's so early on, it might give a kind of tortoise in the hair mentality to the, well, the situation, I guess. But Barcelona are looking great. They've got David Villa back as well. He's already scored. I thought Madrid would fly out of the blocks. I really did.
But what do you think about Mourinho's comments? I mean, he did say, but I am the coach, and if there are people who aren't committed, it's my fault. And then former Real Madrid president Ramon Calderon said in the press that the players could just as easily say that they don't have a coach right now.
Well, look, Madrid, more than anyone, are obviously an absolute bunch of fancy dons. It's just so clear. You only have to look at them to see that. The way they carry themselves, the just sort of attitude that is around the club. I'm not surprised by that. They do rate themselves in a way that you don't really get out of the Barcelona players. So there probably is something to that. Maybe, you know, they won the league last season. They've been really hotly tipped to actually be a lot more effective in Europe, but maybe they're believing the hype of it a little bit and just slacking off. Because, you know, La Liga has been such a two-horse race for such a long time. Maybe they're disregarding other sides. And they were poor against Sevilla as well.
They
went 1-0 down really early. They had the whole game to get back into it, and they just couldn't find the gears.
But the thing was, though, they were getting the chances. And Higuain was a surprising one. Mm. He got in the position, and it was almost like, well, it's already in. And fluffs it.
I agree with what Jim said. I was going to just add to that, that I think they've been poor. And what I've seen of them this season, they've not even been that good. It's not to say they've been peppering everyone and been unlucky. They've just not been good enough. And if you add into the mix, they've got these problems with Ronaldo off the pitch as well, who's obviously their biggest player. You know, it's difficult for them. They want to get, you know, they want to get Kaká off the wage bill. They're finding it very difficult to sort it out. And Ronaldo's claims, by the way, and his problems, I mean, they are. I was speaking to Andy Brassel about it, they are pretty legitimate. I mean, he's very underpaid for the level of player he is. And Real Madrid doesn't look like they can afford to give him any more money. It's not immediately apparent how they're going to resolve that issue. And Barcelona, you know what they're like. They won't care about what Real Madrid are doing. They just carry on steamrolling people. And Real Madrid will have to hope that Barcelona go through that one of those phases they sometimes have in the league where they can't beat teams away from home. They find it hard to break teams down sometimes. Other than that, they've got no chance. It seems crazy to say. We're not even out of September yet. But as I said, they've never overhauled that point.
They've not met each other yet. Current form, Barcelona will smash them.
Yeah.
Well, in the Super Cup, though, Real Madrid were very good.
Mm.
So they were. And Puyol.
Maybe they thought they'd won the league. They've got so used to only really caring about Barcelona. They thought, we're done now.
Puyol's body's starting to let him down by the look of it as well. He keeps getting injured, doesn't he? So maybe that'll be a bit of a...
They've seen this coming, though, haven't they? They're well prepared for that.
Mm. Levante haven't had the best of starts so far to La Liga. We spoke a lot about them last season, but they've just signed somebody who's going to help them out. Obafemi Martins.
18-year-old Obafemi Martins.
That's right, yeah. I think he's in the peak of his career now. It got him from Ruben Kazan, so it'd be interesting to see what the nippy Nigerian can do.
Mm. Barcelona were pretty ruthless, weren't they, against Getafe as well? Yeah. And Bilbao, that was another amazing game.
Thrill.
It's crazy entertainment value at Bilbao.
They conceded 12 goals in their opening four games this season.
Are they still doing okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, one of them was a clean sheet, to be fair. They won 2-0, I think.
Okay, right, yeah. Interesting.
So, yeah, there you go. Not as exciting as Scotland, but still Spain will provide something. Serie A. Oh, Milan.
Mm.
Losing at home to Atalanta, 1-0, booed off. Allegri was saying that to lose your first two home games of the season isn't pleasant. I'd say it was far from that. And he also said that there are some young lads here that they need to grow up quickly. And I think that's a fair point. I mean, they had such a clear out at the end of last season with so much experience. Mm. And also, and their best two players.
Well, I think the problem was it was a clear out they didn't want to have. Yeah. They were forced
but
to.
But it was inevitable.
It was. But they've not replaced Thiago Silva.
The clear out, I'm talking about the older...
Cassano either.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the more experienced players, you know, the Inzaghi.
Oh, I know you are. Yeah, but I mean, it was just terrible timing. That financially, they had to bring in some cash, and a lot of these players are just reaching the end of their, you know, their kind of footballing natural lives. So it's just a perfect storm of holy fuck for Milan, really, isn't it?
They've not prepared for the inevitable departure of those players. That, as you touched on, the financial thing is difficult for them. Yeah, that was another example. I mean, following on to what we just said about Real Madrid, Milan, they were poor against Atalanta. It wasn't that they struggled. Mm. Abbiati, I think, got man of the match.
Yeah.
And they still lost 1-0.
Well, and they're not the sort of side that often, you know, in the last few years have brought in a lot of youth players. And they're quite an impatient lot, as you can imagine, because they've had a lot of success.
Mm. I mean, who have they brought in of note? They've got Pazzini, who's done okay.
Yeah.
De Jong, who's a typical Allegri player, functional, not going to excite the fans. Yeah. And they've got Bojan on loan. That's all they've got, really.
It's not. And Bojan didn't exactly set the world alight for Roma, so it's.
No. I mean, there's a lot of hope on El Shaarawy.
But, well, Bandini, Paolo Bandini was talking about that. I don't want to call him Bandini, that's very rude of me, sorry.
Arturo Bandini.
Yeah, Paolo Bandini said that, you know, the formation they're playing isn't suiting the players they've got, and everyone seems to know that apart from Allegri. And I think, from what I can. Sort of gleam by reading between the lines that Berlusconi doesn't really like Allegri, but Galliani does, and that's why he's still in a job effectively. But you wonder how they, I mean, do you know what I thought when I saw the Atalanta game? I sort of thought this is the sort of game that Zlatan would bail him out of. He'd get a goal,
or he'd
get a couple of goals even, because he's, you know, he can pull a goal out of nothing. Yeah, and that never looked likely to happen.
They don't have a goal scorer in that side.
No.
Pazzini, you hope. I mean, he got the hat trick the other week.
But his form has been very patchy.
It has been patchy. Yeah. But they do not have a proper goal scorer. Where they tend to the history of that club with big goal scorers.
And I thought they looked slow as well. Atalanta's goal is a great example of them just not pressuring the ball, not getting anywhere near it. It was a nice passing move, and it was finished with a sort of a reasonably good shot into the bottom corner from quite far out that Abbiati couldn't quite get to. But there's no pressure on the ball. Every time in the world he wanted to take the shot, and that was so typical of them, really.
And I tell you what, when it comes to the Champions League, I mean, they really could struggle.
They've got Malaga, Zenit and Anderlecht, haven't they?
Well, just the sugar daddy nature of football means the power balance of these sort of teams is shifting. You look at, you know, the Paris Saint-Germain cherry picking AC Milan's two best players, and Milan being powerless to do anything against it. What sort of bizarro world is that?
Well, it's worth pointing out, Jim, by the way, as you said earlier, they've not replaced Thiago Silva and Zlatan. They can't.
No,
he's the best defender in the world, and arguably the best striker, one of the best strikers in the world. How are they going to replace him? It's impossible.
I mean, so many people said it, but would it have not been an ideal situation for all to get Kaká in on loan?
I'm sure they would have tried that.
I don't know why they didn't.
Yeah,
there must have been some
sort of spanner in the works of that, because that does make perfect sense for everybody involved.
Well, not Shevchenko.
Or maybe it would have, actually, I'll tell you what it probably was that Madrid would have wanted Milan to pay more of Kaká's wages, or all of their wages, than they would have been open to. It's going to be something like that.
With all those players they've lost and the status of Serie A, it's probably just a case that they can't attract these big strikers. Yeah. I mean, you know, look at the big strikers are on the market. I mean, for example, someone like Falcao's a bit of a bad example because he's not been at
Emil Heskey.
He's still without a club. So get on the phone. No, but someone like Llorente, he's not going to go to Milan, is he?
No.
I mean, he knows.
And that's the thing. But you know, Milan were one of those clubs. And I suppose in my heart they probably still are, and maybe for yourselves as well, but they're one of those clubs who certainly were, if they come knocking, you go.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, Manchester United,
football
Real Madrid,
royalty.
Barcelona, they're one of those clubs, they come knocking, I can't argue with that.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
That's right.
And I don't think any club in Italy is. I mean, Juventus were for a while.
Mm. Well, Van Persie said the thing that put him off about, well, it was widely sort of suspected that the thing that put him off at Juve was this match-fixing business, the alleged match-fixing that's happening, and the fact that Conte would have been suspended for so long ruled it out.
Yeah, well, I mean,
it's really dogged Italian football.
It's still the Calciopoli scandal. Is the scars are still not properly healed, are they? Mm. Because there are things like this happening, and the league did suffer a kind of dip in its credibility and its status that it's still not recovered from.
Mm. It's such a shame. But what Juventus have done is they've got a good system. They've got a good coach. Okay, he's banned from the touchline and all the rest of it. But they're playing good football. You know,
they have a lot of Italian players as well.
They do.
And that's made a big difference.
Absolutely.
I love that Giovinco is known as the Atomic Ant.
Great stuff.
They had a good win, but Inter are looking alright. I mean, they've got Milito and Cassano. I mean, they're probably the side who have got the most worldly recognised players, you know, Schneider and Milito.
When we when we mentioned the ridiculous nature of Argentina's front line last week, we didn't even mention Milito.
Yeah,
no,
that's how good
doesn't
they
even
are.
Get the flipping Nora.
He'd be England's best striker.
Oh, head and shoulders.
Yeah,
but the one side I was, you know, it's early days still, but really hoping they could make a challenge with Roma. I go 2-0 up against Bologna. I'm thinking, that's it, lads. And then Bologna with an unbelievable comeback with Gilardino and Diamante. Yeah.
Two good players. Exactly. Gilardino's been around for a while.
Yeah.
Diamante's, you know, no one really expected him to play much in Euro 2012 or even get into the squad initially, but he's shown his quality, actually. Mm. I think he's done well.
But surely Milan can pick up a striker like Gilardino. Well, not now. I know they haven't done it, but do you know what
I mean? They have in Pazzini, haven't they?
Well, I suppose. So.
Yeah. It's early days, yeah, isn't it?
Who knows?
I just think, going back to Milan, Allegri's a really annoying manager. Like, when he signed De Jong, I was just like, oh, really? Mm. Yeah, because he's just that typical sort of functional manager.
Loves a Christmas tree.
Yeah, exactly. It just annoys me.
Yeah. Well, let's go to League Ur, where their former hero is now playing, and he scored again.
Of course he did.
Nice finish as well.
2-0. Yeah, 2-0 PSG to lose it. Zlatan and Pastore.
The defending for Pastore was woeful.
But it was lovely finish.
No, but with Pastore, it was one of those ones. Zlatan was about 10 yards offside. The ball goes through. Now, I think it wouldn't have made any difference if he was there or not. Pastore ran through it and knocked it over the keeper. Yeah, but as soon as Pastore gets the ball, Zlatan immediately is back into play.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's that rule again, isn't it? Where you think, well, no, he was well offside.
But you can look at it that way, but you look at it that way because that's what's transpired. But the defender should just defend properly. Defend properly. Yeah, okay. It's as simple as that. It was so easy for Pastore. It gives someone of that quality. The goalkeeper can't do anything because he's in no man's land. He's always going to score. Yeah, but the goals of the weekend were Alan Traore's.
You like that, didn't you?
Yeah. Proper banana shot.
Lorient versus Rennes.
The free kick.
If you scored if you scored one of those goals in your career, you'd be like, that's brilliant. You scored two in one game.
Probably about four or five.
Have you, yeah? for Lorient.
Yeah, not in Ligue 1.
Lorient 2, Rennes 0. Alan Traore, check it out on them internets. It's worth looking at.
Yeah, absolutely.
Two beautiful goals.
Nice played Brest on
the weekend. Don't work when you say it, does it? When you see it
The fixture, of course, the fixture, if you looked at it, it just said nice Brest.
I'm not even. Marcus is staring into my eyes as he says that, and I'm a little disconcerted.
Because I can see it.
I'll repeat that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I'm not even going to tell you the score because that's not why I put it in.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. let's zoom off to South America, Argentina specifically. One Roman Riquelme has officially had his contract at Boca suspended, so he's on unpaid leave.
So that's a weird thing, isn't it? Suspending his contract. So at some point he's like 60. Right, you're up. We've been playing a long game to get you on this,
exactly.
You shit.
He's played for Boca for free before, hasn't he?
Yeah. He has done, yeah. I mean, it is a strange one. We talked about him again before, saying that he had nothing left to give, etc, etc. And I thought he's going to retire from the game.
How old is he now?
He's got to be 34, what? I think. I thought he was going to retire, but no, he's on unpaid leave and is free to sign for any club outside of Argentina.
It's a weird one with Riquelme because he never really ran anyway.
So, no, that's
he'd probably go on for a while.
Yeah. El Diego suggests that Riquelme lacks motivation, but Riquelme said, I'm not interested in what he says.
But it wasn't even though he said that. The actual quote is, I'm not interested in whatever that guy said. I can't remember who it was, but I'm not interested in what he said.
It's incredible, isn't it? Two absolute legends of that club. Yeah. Really been and Palermo as well. They can't stand him either. But he did say, I've fulfilled all my dreams as a player. And he did say, now it's time for Leandro Paredes to shine.
The young boy is strong.
Yeah, he's only 18.
That's a nice little nod.
I think so, yeah. But Riquelme went on to say, I feel I play better than before. so if you have a team, just let me know and we'll kick a ball about.
Oh, we got a team.
Ramble. It'd be brilliant.
Rupert Fry wouldn't be happy with that.
Tough shit.
Yeah, if there was one man who could dislodge him from the number 10 jersey. Elsewhere in South America, we go to Brazil, where the mascot for the 2014 World Cup will be a Brazilian endangered armadillo.
I'm delighted with that. Let's get more weird animals as mascots. Ocelots. Oryxes.
Are they endangered in Brazil though?
I don't think so. They don't have to be endangered. They'd just be weird.
Well, it annoys me when they've got a chance of mascots to use animals and they don't use them. They use made up creatures instead. Yeah, like the ones for the Euros and the ones for the Olympics.
Like that. What about playmakers? They're an endangered species in Brazil.
Mm-hmm. So the Olympics would have been amazing if we had like a badger and a fox.
Or like a stoat and an elephant.
Elephant.
They're not really native to Britain.
Well, it doesn't matter. It's a world event.
You kind of missed the point of what he said. But
no, I'm making my own point.
Okay.
I'm not sure what it is, but I'm making it.
Well, anyway, the armadillo, they've whittled down the list of names to three. Fuleco and Zuzeco.
I think they can keep this in-house.
Apparently these names are proving unpopular in Brazil. I would have fancied an Inho in there, like a Zuzinho.
I quite like Zuzeco.
Zuzeco's the standard
Zuzeco's the one, but I'd prefer Zuzinho.
Yeah, fair enough.
Zinho. That means little zoo.
Zizinho was a player for Brazil. Quite famous, yeah.
Zinho. Not Zuzinho. But we're splitting hairs, I feel. FIFA have said they have until mid-November to decide which name they'll use.
One of the means...
Get any important things sorted out.
One of the means...
For the good of the game.
excuse me, is a representation of friendliness and joy, and the other two are an ecological message. Ronaldo was the one who unveiled the mascot, saying, "I'm delighted to welcome such an important member to the 2014 team. I'm sure he will inspire many young fans in Brazil and all over the world with the great passion he has for sport and his country."
He's really going to inspire young players, isn't it?
Like, before cooking him and eating him.
Yeah, like the Neymar of the next generation would be interviewed. So, what, you know, who really inspired you? Oh, yeah, it was a cartoon armadillo, actually. Really made me first want to start playing. Yeah, not playing my way out of poverty or emulating my heroes. But this cartoon armadillo.
But this fictional character does have a lot of passion for his sport and country.
Well, so that's something.
You didn't listen to that, but obviously. FIFA Secretary General Jerome Valcke has offered his thoughts into this, as if he's not.
What's he been told to do on the other
week? Well, that's what I thought. He said the fact that the armadillo is a vulnerable species is very fitting. One of the key objectives through the 2014 World Cup is to use the event as a platform to communicate the importance of the environment and ecology.
Is it?
I was about to say.
I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure outside the World Cup final in 2010, I saw a FIFA branded cooling tower.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I thought it was to do with football and greed,
and not in that order.
That should be the slogan:
football and greed, not in that order.
Oh dear. And the official World Cup football will be called Brazuca, which is an informal word which describes a nickname for Brazilians. Mm-hmm. So on and so forth. So there you go. There's your South American chat. And now we're going to move on to an email.
Ooh,
Jim, you've got the email.
You're up, Jim.
Chaps.
Yes, good, that's
good start. Yeah. I remember the Pitchside races, which I think were ran when Ensley Insurance sponsored the Football League.
We talked about this last week.
If memory serves, John Williams was the overall champion and secured a move to Coventry City off the back of it.
Yeah.
I want to say Big Ron was the manager at the time, but might be mistaken. Sounds consistent with everything I know about the man, to be honest. I am pretty sure he was a former postman. I think the races were regular on St. and Greavesy when presenters were presenters. Right on. That's from, I don't know how you pronounce this, but it looks like Givier.
I think Gavin is his name.
Gavin, right. Yeah. Okay. Cheers, Gav.
I actually found a YouTube video of it.
Oh, did you?
I sent the Ramble Hive Mind out in Twitter to find it, and they found it on YouTube, and someone had video camera their TV, so it was really poor quality. Yeah. John Williams, I think, played for Swansea at the time, did indeed win it. Mm. And I think it must have got chucked off when they realised it was ridiculous because they had to play football afterwards and they'd get injured. Yeah. But it's still quite a nice little touch.
It's class, that.
Speaking of Big Ron, I found out today, you know, when Barcelona got Terry Venables as their manager,
no.
Big Ron was the first choice.
Oh my.
Really?
I don't know if that's true, but that's what I heard
how
today.
How different history could it be?
Imagine that, eh?
Oh, Gordon Bennett.
So get your emails in next for show@thefootballramble.com.
Yeah. Right, ladies and gentlemen, it's profile time. And I think it's fitting that due to what's been going on with regards to the Hillsborough investigation and so on and so forth, that we induct one of the greatest British footballers of all time. It's King Kenny Dalglish.
Mm, yes.
Big. Feels bit. Like we've already done this.
I know. I think we've done a number
just
of
just because we've done Shankly, we've done Souness.
Yeah, he pops up in all of them.
Yeah.
That's right, yeah. But and what a player he was. He was born on the 4th of March, 1951.
Oh, 16 years before the Summer of Love.
The Summer of Love. He was brought up in Glasgow and spent a part of his youth living in Govan, which is, of course, very close to where Rangers play. And he was a Rangers fan.
Yeah.
I forgot that completely, actually.
Well, the story goes that he, when the Celtic dignitaries or whoever it was came around, might even been Jock Stein actually, came around to his house to try and sign him.
It was Sean Fallon, Jock Stein's assistant.
Is the folklore tell is that he rushed upstairs to his bedroom and tore all his Rangers posters down?
There was something like that. Yeah. Well, that's right. Stein told Fallon to go around there, and the story also says that Fallon was taking his family for a day out by the seaside because it was his and his wife's anniversary, but Stein had told him to go and have a quick word with Dalglish. So they went round there, detoured past Dalglish's house, and just he just thought he'd have a little chat to him, something like that. 3 hours later, he comes out of the house and he's got Dalglish to sign for Celtic. His family was a bit pissed off, just waiting on the street.
Looking back at it now, hopefully they understand.
Yeah, I think so. I think they should. Before then, though, Dalglish had been down south for trials at Liverpool and West Ham. Liverpool offered to extend Dalglish's trial, but Kenny said no because he needed to return home before going down to London for his West Ham trial. But the truth was that the Rangers were playing Celtic and he had a ticket and he wanted to go and see the game.
Oh, right. I heard that around sort of the mid-60s that Liverpool tried to sign him, but Jockstein wouldn't let him go.
Well, Shankly wanted him.
Yeah.
And it was, I think it was Shankly's regret that he never actually signed him. Because he went when it was Bob Paisley, of course.
Yeah.
And Shankly, you watch him play and would tear his hair out. And he was annoyed that, that he kind of got away from Liverpool.
Yeah, okay. Initially, at least.
Initially, of course, yeah. So, but, you know, 10 years later, he would be at the club. But he was the one that got away for Shankly. But they did get him, but Shankly...
It would have been a good time to be playing for Celtic around then, because Lisbon Lions were 67, weren't they?
Well, that's right. But when he signed for Celtic, you know, a few weeks later, I mean, of course, he was only a young lad. He wasn't in the first team or anything. But Celtic, a few weeks later, won the European Cup. Mm. So you can understand why. I mean, even being a Rangers fan, when Celtic came to get him, the biggest club in Europe.
Still the only Scottish club to have done that, you know.
So. To have won the European Cup, absolutely. Mm. So I mean, you know, he would have probably preferred to play for Rangers. Well, no, suppose so. But
yeah,
what do you wait around, wait for them to make an offer, or do you go to the European Champions?
Mm.
You know? 3 years after his debut, in 1971, he got his first goal for Celtic, and it came against Rangers in a Scottish League Cup tie at Ibrox, and it was a penalty, and Dalglish stepped up to take it, and apparently he tied his shoelaces as he was waiting, and the crowd were like giving him absolute penalties, you know, and he calmly slotted away. Which would start the a brilliant scoring for Celtic.
Yeah, I heard. I don't know how true this is. It's difficult to get sort of corroboration on this, but there was some sort of friendly that he played for the reserve team, because he was in the reserve team itself for quite a while,
wasn't he?
And he scored a lot of goals.
Yeah.
I think on his debut,
Cumbernauld United was.
No, that was where he went on loan. That was where he went on loan.
He went on loan, yeah.
But he played. I'm pretty sure he played a friendly or some sort of testimonial or something against Kilmarnock.
Yeah,
and it was like his first game for Celtic in that sort of sphere, and I think he scored 6 goals, which is a decent shot.
That's class.
Yeah.
Well, his first full season at Celtic, he scored 23 goals in 49 games, and then next season he got 41 goals in all competitions. So he was turning heads and becoming a real favourite with the crowd. He went on to become Celtic captain. He won the league 4 times with them, the Scottish Cup 4 times and the League Cup once. And his record for Celtic is 320 games and 167 goals, which is very good. I mean, he wasn't an out-and-out front man as well.
Second striker, or just behind the big man, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was superb for them, you know, and he's one of the Celtic greats, of course. And during his time there, he did establish himself as a regular in the Scottish national team. You know, he played in the 74 and the 78 World Cup, when the Scots really did have a really good side. They were the best team in Britain, you would have argued, because England never got there and neither did anybody else from the British Isles, apart from Scotland. But they a little bit disappointing, you know, going out in the first round, especially in 78 with Ali's army.
Yeah,
they were expected big things. I mean, he scored against Holland. They beat Holland 3-2, which
the Archie Gemmell,
you know, yeah, that's right. In between World Cups, he did have a very fine moment for Scotland when he nutmegged Ray Clements against England at Hampden.
It's huge, absolutely.
Is. I mean, talk about folklore. I mean,
there will be Scottish football fans who will say that's genuinely the best moment of their life.
He tormented England defences on a few occasions, certainly. And then Bob Paisley bought him for Liverpool for £440,000. Liverpool had just sold Kevin Keegan.
It was replacement for him, wasn't it?
He was, yeah.
What year was that?
77.
You know, Keegan was absolutely huge for Liverpool. I think there was some scepticism at first that Dougley should be able to step up to it, but you know, it didn't last long before he
Keegan himself said, Kenny may prove a better player for Liverpool than I did. And he was right.
Yeah. He's just lacked confidence.
Yeah, something Keegan would say though, isn't it?
Yeah, Pete's not here.
That's enough. And he filled Keegan's number 7 jersey very well indeed. Again, adjoining a side who had just become European champions. But even then, I mean, you join a team who've just become European champions, and they've got great players throughout. But even then, Dalglish still added something to that team.
Well, they won it in 78, didn't they? They won the European Cup of 78. Yeah.
He scored the winner, you know. And that was his final, the last thing he did of an incredible season.
It was such an incredible team that Liverpool had during that period. And Dalglish was there for the majority of their dominance. And, you know, just... his contribution cannot be underplayed to make it, they were the leading team in Europe, really.
Yeah,
I love what he said about the goal against Club Brugge, where he actually said in an interview that, because it's a great finish, someone slips him in, might have been Souness, slips him in, and he goes in through the right channel, and the keeper comes out and he dinks it over him. It's a great finish. And he actually said that he'd seen I forget who it was, but another Liverpool player go through twice and have it saved by the keeper, and he said, I knew then that keeper goes down very quickly, so if I get a chance, I'm lifting it over him. That's exactly what he did.
He's just a really busy player in the
great
box,
football intelligence,
absolute like handful.
But very intelligent player, though. He's only 5'8", was Dougley. He's not the biggest. But very strong, technically superb as well. But he was...
With both feet, by the way.
Yeah, but a glorious touch, you know. Just one of those players is just a delight to watch, you know. Yeah. And so intelligent, as you say. I mean, he scored inside 7 minutes of his league debut against Middlesbrough. And then his first appearance in front of the Kop. And then he scores the winner in the European Cup final. Mm. Just... What a season.
Decent start.
It really is, you know, and it's a different country as well. I mean, I know England, Scotland aren't poles apart, but still.
Do you know, it really hits home for me when you see players of that era and you see someone like Souness or Dalglish or whatever on the telly, and maybe, I don't know, for whatever reason, you don't agree with what they're saying, or you start to doubt the point they're making, and it'll flash up 3 times European Cup winner. Yeah. You go, all right, fair enough.
Next season, he was voted Footballer of the Year.
Because that is mental, by the way.
For the football writers, yeah.
They're winning that many European Cups. 3 times. He's some of the greatest players of our generation. Yeah, like people like, you know, I don't know, like Paul Scholes. They've not won 3 European Cups, you know.
Yeah. Dalglish was a kind of player that when the fans watched him, I'm sure they'd have known that they were seeing an all-time great in front of their eyes. You know, you know, when you see Messi now, you think this guy will be talked about forever. Mm. And Dalglish was one of those players, you know, in front of the club. And then Ian Rush came along to Liverpool and joined the party, and he linked superbly well. Mm. And Dalglish and Rush did, assisting the big Welshman on so many occasions. And Dalglish himself scored 172 goals for Liverpool, for crying out loud.
Do you have his assist statistics? I imagine they would have been high as well. He's one of those brilliant players that would just make as many goals.
Oh, absolutely phenomenal. He's probably had more than goals for Liverpool, you know.
Yeah.
And then on the international scene in 1984, he scored his last ever goal for Scotland, taking him to 30 international goals after playing in 1982, scoring against New Zealand. He equaled Dennis Law's record of 30. He played another couple of years and finished with 102 caps. Mm. So over 100 caps at international level.
It's decent, isn't it?
When they had a good side and holds the record with 30. So
they won the European Cup Liverpool in 81 as well, didn't they? Beat Real Madrid in the final. Mm. And Laurie Cunningham played for Real Madrid, started that game.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. He's in the old Hall of Fame as well.
He is indeed. At 34 years of age, he took over Liverpool as player manager in 1985.
This is where it all gets a bit Roy the Rovers, isn't it?
It does,
this is incredible.
Well, it was just missing out European Cup wins. He won the European Cup in 84 as well.
Well, sadly, of course, that was not long after the Heysel Stadium disaster. So he took over a very, very sensitive and very sad time for the club.
Because they were holders of the European Cup in 84, and in 85 they were beaten by Juventus.
That's right.
In the
Heysel
Stadium, yeah.
So the club really needed somebody, a big man to get things going again for them in that kind of sense, and he was the man to do it. He was the everybody wanted him to do it, but he was still a player.
This is the thing. You see this all the time. You know, Alan Shearer at Newcastle is a great example. You know, fans want one of their returning heroes or even one of their current heroes to save the club, and it so rarely works out. Yeah. Like, in fact, this is the only real example I can think of that's worked to this degree, and it's incredible that Dalglish, while a player, took on the responsibilities of being the manager and still had them winning things. Competing.
To take over as manager after the Heysel Stadium disaster would have been such a task. Mm. But to take over as a manager, still be playing, and still keep them at the top of their game, winning trophies, it's just...
He played all the way up to like 89, didn't he? His last appearance...
90.
Like, even 90.
Yeah, but I mean, he very much... It was only a couple of appearances.
Yeah, and that's what's really commendable about it as well. He knew when to take himself out of the situation to give other players a chance. He knew when his experience would be needed.
I like to think of like 89, 90, it was a bit like, come on, I'll show you again. I'll give you a reminder what you should be doing.
That's right, yeah. Well, in the first season, he was in charge, as you said, Jim, it was Royal Rovers stuff, League and Cup double.
Yeah. And unbelievable.
And he scored the only goal of the game in the last day of the season for Liverpool.
For Melchester.
To clinch them the league.
Put it into perspective, really. We should, just to show how special a player he was. I mean, you've got players who will be decent football players who have a whole career in the game.
Yeah.
And it'll be the highlight of their career to win a trophy. Mm. Yeah, Dalglish dealt almost exclusively in trophies. He won so many trophies, it was borderline unbelievable. Yeah. He was such a good player, you know. I mean, this is the player that Franz Beckenbauer said, one of the greatest players in the history of football.
Oh, yeah.
That's Franz Beckenbauer saying that. You know, this man, it's not to be underestimated. For our younger listeners, who maybe only remember him recently for managing Liverpool or being a bit of an ambassador, he was a phenomenal player. You know, the greatest player in the history of Liverpool Football Club. Mm. You know, the number one player who shook the Kop, which is the name of their greatest player. You know, it cannot be said enough how good he was.
I heard Pele rates him as well.
Yeah, he doesn't actually.
Does he not?
Diego doesn't rate him. No.
That makes it even more the better. Yeah. And then he brought in John Aldridge and Peter Beardsley, which is another effective.
But that was interesting because he brought them in together to be a strike partnership, which is quite unusual. It's a bold move, isn't it?
Yeah.
But like Carolyn Suarez, in a way.
But my goodness, but Aldridge...
Much better.
Aldridge and Beardsley worked, didn't it? One of the big things in Dalglish's time at Liverpool was, of course, being in charge on that fateful day at Hillsborough in 1989 when they played Nottingham Forest. And Dalglish's presence and efforts, if you like, after the tragedy has been described by many as colossal and heroic. Yeah. Again, he proved what a just an incredible character he was. And he went to, I think, all of it, or certainly the vast majority of the funerals, which is incredible.
I think he showed that not only being a magnificent football player, that he was actually a very high quality individual as well. He carried himself, from what I can remember, because I do remember it. I was quite young, but I still remember it. He carried himself with immense dignity and class and integrity throughout the entire thing. And it's actually something that contributed to him leaving the post at Liverpool, wasn't it?
That's right.
It did weigh very heavily on his heart, as you would imagine it would do, because it's almost like he took, in the same way that Shankly sort of, I suppose, felt like he represented Liverpool as a city, and said that this club means a lot to the people. I think Dalglish saw himself as a bit of an ambassador, and as he should have done as the manager, and I guess it, as I say, weighed very heavily on his heart. It was a real shame to see.
He went to a lot of the funerals of the fans. I think he went to three or four in a day at one point. He was really dedicated to doing everything he could. It just speaks so highly of him, his own actions.
And Dalglish, he didn't leave Liverpool at the end of the season after the Hillsborough tragedy. And you could have understood if in the summer he'd have gone, I'll tell you what, I need a break from football, having done all that. It was almost as if he guided Liverpool through that time.
Through the stormy water, sort
exactly.
Of thing,
and then he left in 91. And again, it just showed you what an incredible character he was and how much he loved that club and the city and how much they loved him as well. I mean, his record as manager in charge of Liverpool was 3 league titles, 2 FA Cups and a League Cup. Incredible.
Just as a manager, that is.
And playing as well, manager. Yeah. Just all rolled into one. Dalglish left Liverpool in 1991 and later that year would take charge of Blackburn Rovers, who were in the second division at the time.
Well, we were talking in the entertainers profile about Keegan managing to take Newcastle up and do so well. And Dalglish did a similar thing, didn't he, with Blackburn? He really, really just got them flying pretty much immediately.
But he went one step further than Keegan and won the league. He took them up almost straight away and signed Alan Shearer in the close season for 3.5 million from Southampton. Finished fourth in their first season back in the top.
Amazing.
It really is.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I know it was a few years ago, but still... and then they finished second the following season, hot on Manchester United's heels. And Dalglish had put together quite some side at this point. Yeah, Tim Flowers, David Batty, Chris Sutton, they were all there.
They were a great team.
They really were. Colin Hendry at the back.
Colin Hendry was magnificent.
Sutton and Shearer formed quite the partnership.
The
SAS. He liked a strike partnership, didn't he?
He did, Dalglish. He really did.
And they won the league. Yeah, and they lost at Anfield on the final day of the season, but Manchester United failed to beat West Ham in that famous run-in.
McCloskey had the game of his life.
Didn't he just?
And sponsored by Skoda, wasn't he, McCloskey? Weird.
And Dalglish and Blackburn Rovers won the league. And he became the third manager to have won the top flight in England with two different teams, along with Herbert Chapman and Brian Clough.
Good company, esteemed company.
Yeah, both Dwoffers. And he moved upstairs pretty soon after winning the league at Blackburn and then would soon leave the club. And then he went to Newcastle, which we spoke about, the entertainers. Didn't fare quite so well there. And after which he went to Celtic and won the League Cup. Yeah. Well, he didn't stay too long at Celtic. And then years after leaving Celtic... he was out of the game for over a decade, I think. Incredibly, came back to Liverpool, which was obviously very recently, and we talked a lot about that.
He started off as an ambassador sort of role, didn't he?
He did, yeah. But, he led Liverpool to League Cup glory and then FA Cup final. But the man they call King Kenny, voted the club's greatest ever player, will always be loved by the Anfield faithful.
I mean, you've got a player there who, at Liverpool, one of the great clubs in the history of football.
Yeah.
You know, one of the biggest clubs in the world, have been for an awful lot of time, and he's been voted their best ever player. You don't need to say more than that.
Huge.
Well, Bob Paisley, the man who continued Shankly's great work at Liverpool all those years ago and then took Liverpool to the top of Europe, said this about Dalglish. He said, "Of all the players I've played alongside, managed and coached in more than 4 decades, he is the most talented." And you can't argue with that. And King Kenny comes into the Dean with us, Hall of Fame. Marvellous stuff. Right, ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of the show. If you want to get in touch with us, the email address is show@thefootballramble.com. The Twitter is @footballramble. And the website is thefootballramble.com.
Easy to remember.
Indeed.
Yeah, I've got a little plug.
Go on then,
Jimbo. Same one as last week. I'm doing a showcase at the Soho Theatre, 25th of September. Tickets available on the Soho Theatre website.
Oh, and I've contributed to a book which is out this week. It's called Life's a Pitch. Which is it's basically a book about football where each a different writer contributes a different chapter about a different thing. It's well worth buying. You get it on Amazon. My chapter is obviously about Portsmouth, but I could have written about loads of stuff, but I just chose Portsmouth.
Yeah.
So shut up. No, it's good though. Just check it out. Amazon.com. It's called Life's a Pitch.
There you go. And I'm bringing Sexy back. Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Jim.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me, you beauties.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.